It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'd like to welcome everybody to this very special Star Wars edition of the Van Wee Financial Hour. May the 4th be with you all. Had to do it.
Wow.
He's shaking his head.
I wish you hadn't.
Got to do it. It sounds like you're lisping Chevy Chase line. Anyway, it is May all of a sudden, and I'm very happy because April stunk.
It was pretty bad.
Yeah. But May, I don't know how attitudes can change on a turn on a dime like that, but what a difference a day makes or a month makes or whatever it was. So when we get around to talking to about the market, it was a lot more fun this week than last, although you know, they haven't been all that bad lately. It's just kind of discouraging when a month goes by that's supposed to be a good one, and it doesn't turn out that way. But we'll see what this one will bring. Anyway, if you're a returning regular, thanks for listening all the time. We depend on you. Appreciate you very much. And if you're new to the show, either found it by accident or somebody told you about it, try to stick around for the hour, because one of the things we will do with very low fail rate, like zero, we'll tell you that you'll always learn something, and I can pretty much say that today will be no exception to that. So we'll dive right into it, and as usual, we'll have a trivia question right after the first break. It's kind of a doozy. I think you're going to like it, and we'll see what comes up. I know we have some things on the probable agenda for this show that will interest you. We've been talking for a couple months, especially about young people. This is kind of related to that, and I sort of wrapped up the series that's specifically for young people. But there's no substitute for youth if you start investing. The earlier you start, lower your age, the easier it becomes, because time is your friend. That's the pretty much the definition of compounding, and it is a miracle. So we'll get into all that pretty soon, but first off, I'm going to let Adam tell you about a really fun couple of days in May.
Yeah, it was. I want to back up a bit more and talk about the end of last month as well, but it was a Fed meeting week, so you knew it was going to be volatile.
Guaranteed.
It's just there's no way that it doesn't have some volatility. We always say that there's a big up day and a big down day, and not necessarily in that order, and you don't know if it'll be the day before the meeting, the day of the meeting, the day after the meeting, but they're always it happens so regularly, it's like clockwork. And the market didn't disappoint. That's exactly what happened. We saw a really big up day on Friday, but that was related to something else, the jobs report. The big down day was, I believe, Tuesday. It fell off the rails. I was getting emails from clients who were getting worried.
Surprised.
And yeah, it was a nightmare. But the results this week were actually quite good. The Dow was up 1.1%, the NASDAQ up 1.4%, and the S&P up 0.5%. So this quarter has actually started off pretty well, despite that really, really tumultuous day on Tuesday. That Friday, the big up day, that was because the jobs report came in and it was a disappointment. Now, that seems a bit counterintuitive when you get bad news and the market rallies like crazy, but the market's looking for a reason for rate cuts, and having a weakening job situation or a weakening economy is a reason for rate cuts. And so for that reason, they didn't want to see it overheated and get a huge number on the jobs report. And that's exactly what happened. So whether or not you consider that good news, the market did take it as good news. So that, I don't know. It's the bad news is good news time in the market again.
Yeah. And I'll dig under those headlines after the first break too.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk more about jobs. There's a lot of jobs data this week, actually.
Yeah.
We're pretty well into earnings season at this point. There's over 1,000 companies that have reported their Q1 results. So far, 71% of companies have beaten on their earnings targets and 64% have beaten on revenue. if you compare those to the long-term averages, we're at 71 on earnings. The long-term average is 65%, so we're well above that. That's a pretty strong result. And then for revenue, we're at 64%. The long-term average is 62%, so right there, but slightly positive. So not all in all, not a bad quarter. Q1 is looking pretty good. The reaction to those earnings hasn't always coincided with the actual results. We're actually seeing, like in the tech sector, we're seeing companies that beat their earnings estimates drop about 1% in that day in trading. So a little bit of an odd disconnect there. But again, the market was pretty negative last month. So a lot of that might have just been got caught up in a bad day or something like that. And it may not be directly related to their results. The most notable company that hasn't reported yet is NVIDIA. And that could definitely change the direction of this market one way or the other based on their results, because that is a big one that people are going to be watching very, very closely. Let's talk about jobs a little bit. Friday's Employment Situation Report, aka the Jobs Report, was a headline number of 175,000 jobs versus 240,000 expected. So pretty big miss. And then you add on to that, the prior months were also revised down by 22,000. So that number then becomes a lot closer to 150,000. It's about a 90,000 miss on the headline number. And not only was the number weak on the job growth side, the wages numbers weren't any better. Wage growth slowed to 2.5% annualized, which won't even cover inflation. So we're definitely seeing things weaken. And I also, there's a lot of anecdotal information out there. You talk to just about anyone who's looked for a job, and it is a lot harder to find a job than it was 2 years ago. I don't care what the numbers say. It's actually quite difficult. We also saw the JOLTS report come out this week, and it showed a slight drop in available jobs. The number's still pretty large, though, 8.5 million open jobs right now. And there are 1.32 open jobs per unemployed worker. That is the lowest number we've seen since COVID, but it's still higher than the 1.19 jobs per open worker we saw in 2019. So the numbers are saying there's a lot of jobs available, but if you talk to anyone who's looking for a job, you may get a different story at this point.
There's a kind of a disconnect, and a lot of it is in the numbers if you know where to look. And one of the things that's happening is there is a kind of a decided trend toward part-time jobs. You're seeing a lot of numerical jobs, but a lot of those now are part-time. That's not what people are looking for. They're looking for full-time and settling for part-time. And I think that's part of the reason, but I got a few other things too that I want to bring in. The confusion about this entire economy that's been reigning for the last 2 years almost, it goes on and on. And I don't know if it's a trust factor with me and the government numbers or not, but we'll discuss it right after a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Banwe Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwe Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwe.
And I'm Adam Banwe.
And we do have a trivia question, but I will remind everybody first that lines are open. If you want to call in, our number is 904-222-8255. And if that's not easy enough to remember, 904-222-TALK. All right. Trivia question is, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. A recent survey surveyed all Americans and then broke it down by the generations, you know, Gen X and the boomers and so on, as to what they thought they were worth per hour to work. And I haven't picked on millennials since I can remember, so I decided today's the day. Based on what the average millennial believes is his or her worth per hour of work, what would the annual salary have to be for a millennial to receive what he or she thinks it is worth on average? Just based on a regular 40-hour week, what would be the annual salary to make these people happy? Or to make them satisfied, I guess. And you're probably going to be surprised. We do have, yes, we want to take this right away. Good morning, Alexis.
Hello. Oh, not yep. Hit the button again. Hello. Not working.
Oh well,
let's move on.
We got a problem.
Yeah, we're having a technical difficulty. Yeah. Alexis, if you hear us, hold on a minute.
Yeah, we'll
get it.
We'll get back to you.
Yeah.
All right. The jobs report, as you know, Wednesday is always the ADP company that they serve the private clients, and they came in at what I thought was a pretty respectable number, 192 or something like that. Yeah, 192. Not terrible, not fantastic, just a good number. So then on Friday, we get the reports from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So the first one, the headline number, as they say, that one is the survey for establishments, where they call the big companies month after month and see what the change in hiring has been for them. You know, that number came in at that number Adam was talking about at 175, not too hot, not too cold, pretty much Goldilocksy numbers right there. So that's pretty good. So then I turn it over to the other one. This one is the household survey, where they randomly select households across the country and ask them if they're working or not. And this one, there's usually some kind of a correlation between the two, and you can kind of see where things are going. This one came in at 25,000. And there's just a lot of difference to me between 175 and 25, and I am not sure how to rectify those. So then I go to the third page, which is another thing they've been using since Obama, I think. Okay, we're going to try this again. Good morning, Alexis.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
There
yes,
we go. Yes,
sure can.
4x4. Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, I was just listening to you guys. I recently graduated school about a year ago.
Congratulations.
I've had about a year of working experience under my belt. I put some money away into my 401k and my Roth. I was just wondering if you guys had any advice about percentages and how to start investing for people around my age.
Yes, lots of them.
So you're in your early 20s, I'm assuming?
Yeah, I'm 22.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. If you're there isn't a hard and fast rule about what tax bracket you have to be in to do traditional 401k versus a Roth 401k. Roth 401ks are becoming much more common. Is that what you had, the option of doing one or the other?
I had the option of both. I believe I put a little bit away into each one separately.
Okay. So generally, if you're in the 10 or 12% tax bracket, which depending on your marital situation can be anywhere from making about $50,000 a year all the way up to, if you're married, closer to $100,000 a year, the Roth is going to be almost a no-brainer, especially at your age, because you're getting, once you put that away, you're not getting a tax break when you contribute, but you're getting tax-free growth for, chances are you won't use that money for 40 to 50 years, and you're getting tax-free money growth forever over that time period. So that's going to be a really, really powerful, a huge amount of money that you'll never have to pay taxes on. So if you're just starting out in your career and you make enough to put some money away and you have a Roth option and you're not making a ton of money, I think that is 100% the right answer. Do the Roth. But if you start getting up in the 22, 24% bracket and higher, it still might make sense to do a Roth, but then you really have to start doing the math and looking at the traditional as well, because that tax deduction that you get putting money into your 401k becomes more valuable in the higher tax brackets. So there's no hard and fast answer, but generally that's sort of where I draw the line, is at the 22 or 24% tax bracket.
Quick question. Okay. Have you filed your tax return for 2023 yet?
Hello?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
I can. Do you have any specific accounts that you guys would look into? I think I had a lot in some of Fidelity.
Oh, you mean like what to put it in? I mean, Honestly,
yeah, I had most in like equity and stock.
Definitely. You should be heavy into equities, probably 100% at your age. And I would just try and buy the S&P 500 or a total market fund. That's going to be your best bet. As the dollar value of your savings grows, you'll need to diversify. And as you get older, but, when you're starting out, I think that's your best bet.
Yeah. There's two sides to this. One is the nature of what you're doing to contribute, traditional or Roth. If your tax return says your marginal tax bracket is 10 or 12, I'd go 100% Roth.
Yes.
If it's higher than that, I'd probably call us at the office and we'll break it down for you.
Yeah.
There'll be some or all of that should be in a deductible account, traditional account. So there's how it gets in is point number one. What to do with it is point number two, and I think Adam nailed it. You find a very inexpensive S&P 500 exchange-traded fund or mutual fund
is fine. If it's
depends where you are. At Fidelity, you got all kinds of choices. And just contribute till it hurts and leave it there and don't think about it until it's worth $50,000.
No. And never rate it
for
a stupid expense or unless it's an absolute emergency, just leave it alone and let it grow.
Right.
Yep.
Keep it simple, leave it forever, and you, when you're my age, will have more money than anybody you know.
That is true.
Great to hear.
I thought you might like that. It's also true.
Alexis, did you want to take a shot at our trivia question?
I probably won't know it, but you can give it a try.
Okay, go ahead.
Dad, what annual salary would a millennial need just to be paid what the average millennial thinks they're worth?
I think I saw this online. I think it's $140,000 or $165,000.
Well, it's a recent study that I'm going to tell you about, so keep listening because it's going to be higher than that from this survey.
Oh, God.
That was about what I guessed as well. Mm-hmm. And
well, that one would be what I would call common sense.
Yeah, that would have been a good answer. But
this survey wasn't surveying common sense, believe me.
You'll be shocked when you hear it.
You will. Okay. And we appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to be young, huh?
Yeah, and smart choices. And motivated and saving already. She's gonna be in really good shape.
You know how it used to go when somebody was at a job for a very short time like that, and they got into the 401k. A lot of times the balance wouldn't go up to even $5,000, and most companies then, when you terminated, would automatically close out your account, and send you a check.
Yeah, that happened to me in my first job.
And if you don't know the ins and outs of getting that money back into a tax-free environment, it's going to be taxable and gone, and you just took a couple of years off your investing life.
It's true. I made that mistake. Well, I don't know. I used it to pay for part of grad school. So
that's arguably, in your case, an excellent investment.
It was, for sure. But would it have been better to roll that in an IRA? Perhaps.
This goes back to all the things we've been talking about the last couple months, that the biggest thing about being young is that you don't learn enough about personal finance. So you make mistakes that you don't know you're making because you don't know what you should be doing.
That is very true.
And that's what we try very hard to instill in the young people, both as listeners and people who come to see us and our clients who have children and nieces and nephews and so on. And we have several that are actually opening up accounts for their nieces and nephews and kids, teaching them a little bit about investing at an early age. I know Adam did it very successfully with his kids.
Yeah, they each have accounts, and we do I give them $200 a year to invest in a UTMA account that I control, but I make them pick what they want to buy, and they've both done very well.
Yeah, so you know, there's something to getting them interested. They use things. For instance, you know, every kid uses an Apple or some other iPhone. Well, who makes them? Well, Apple makes them, Samsung makes them. They can learn who these people are. They can learn how to get involved with them, because you might as well put some of your money where some of your money goes.
Yeah.
I have always called that backyard investing. The first time I came up with it, I was looking at Home Depot and how many times a week I was going there at the time, and said, you know, it would just be a lot smarter to own a piece of this rock because they're getting a lot of my money. So that's how I got started in it, and I wrote a couple articles about it. Just, it's all education and awareness for young people, and you will have more money than anybody you know. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we will be getting into some other topics here shortly. I got a little to wrap up on the jobs numbers. But first, I want to remind everybody, lines are open, 904-222-8255. And that we have a trivia question out there. What would the annual salary of a typical millennial have to be to cover what the millennials say they're worth? Now, this is not any one individual, it's a survey and it's an average. But we know that $140,000 is, I'm not going to tell you it's low. I'm going to tell you it's way low.
Mm-hmm.
How about that? So there, I upped your bracket a little bit. So give it a shot. It's, if nothing else, it's going to be good for a laugh. All right. I was talking about the household survey that came in at only $25,000. Then there's this, some people say a gimmick. It's an estimate called the CES, Current Employment Summary, Birth Death Adjustment, and it has nothing to do with people being born or dying. It has to do with what the government believes that businesses are being started and businesses are being closed. The CES Birth Death Adjustment is an estimate of theirs of how many people started a job with a new business that didn't get into the numbers yet because the payroll hasn't been around long enough, versus how many left because companies went out of business. And that birth-death adjustment usually makes some little bit of sense anyway. Some people who write about these things call it made-up jobs. And there's an argument for that. They can't really prove it, and you can't really see where it works its way into the numbers down the line, at least not without being a heck of a lot smarter than I am. But the birth-death adjustment this month, April, it created 363,000 jobs out of 25,000.
That makes sense.
Yeah, this is leaving me cold. Good morning, Lane.
How are you, folks?
We are wonderful. How are you?
I'm trying to recover from the opening joke.
Well, I apologize.
However, this is strictly a public service announcement.
Okay.
In the context of the show, the answer to the trivia, people need to keep in mind, number one, based on your all's advice, you would be 100% in a standard IRA to get that deduction. You may need it. But number two, it's less than my wife wants. So that should give you a pretty good bracket to guess the amount.
That's a good one.
It is shocking. I can't wait to hear your all's explanation.
I can't wait to give it to you.
Yeah.
At least it should comfort you as well as me to know that the millennials are much more realistic, I guess. And they're
absolutely.
Even... Or not, I mean, the baby boomers are much more realistic. Yeah. And even they're goofy. By they, I mean we. So I think that's the one that includes your wife, the goofy ones.
Yeah. I will say we're encouraging a young neighbor to listen. So I hope he's listening.
Good.
And I was getting an engineering degree. And I went into the old gray-haired prof and said, you know, what field of engineering should I get my master's in? And he said, no, you walk down the road there to that business school and get yourself a business degree.
Mm.
And, of course, there I was indoctrinated on saving and all that. And I started in college, and you guys are exactly right. You start realizing that your peers are not doing it. And when they're hurting in their 50s and you're like, I might make it, it's an awful good feeling. So the young people, the earlier they start, the better it is. So, and that's all I've got.
That sounds a lot like some advice that Adam got when he was young. get that engineering degree, but go to business school.
No, I did the exact same thing.
Do you remember?
It paid off. That's right. I remember that, Adam.
Yeah.
Do you remember Neil Bort, what he used to say about those things? Bort's always said, get a law degree and don't use it.
That's great advice.
And it was. And I've really considered it. Unfortunately, by then, I was old enough, I didn't want to get involved with that, and becoming a CFP instead seemed a lot smarter, but didn't have time for both, really. But, yeah, I agree with you. The business aspect of engineering, even, or of anything else, is well worth it. We need those really smart engineers, the ones that are dedicated and highly educated, but they're not going to be the ones that you're living next to if you got a few million in the bank when you retire. That's the sad
thing. There you go.
Yep. Well, we appreciate it. How's everything out? Way, way, way out. Things good out there?
Very good. Very good. Sunny, beautiful day.
Yep.
Getting into beach season, so
all right. Well,
couldn't be better.
Good to hear your voice and tell Pat we said hi.
Thanks for the call in.
All right. Yep. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Bye.
A lot of you will remember hearing Lane on and off over the years on the show. Been a friend for quite a long time now, as it turns out.
Yep. No doubt.
Yeah. It goes on. Anyway, this whole jobs thing, that birth death number makes me wonder what's going on. I can't help but see some political action going on here, and I wonder if that's going to go over to the Fed. A lot of people I think are a little over elated with the possibility that the Fed will lower rates yet this summer. I don't see it.
There's no rational reason that they would do it. You just can't. I can't justify it.
There's a political reason possibly, but no rational reason.
Yeah, but even then, I don't know. I have a hard time believing that they do that for political reasons, but stranger things have happened.
Yeah, I agree. It's not in the cards. I'm going to make an assumption here that I absolutely believe. I think Powell wants to do his job and do it right.
I definitely think that.
I have never questioned his personal integrity in what he's doing. I disagree with him once in a while. I agree with him a lot. I think he tells a story maybe a little too much, but in general, he's not like the old ones that did the jibber-jabber.
No, but he does make too many predictions.
He does. That's the one thing I wish he'd curtail. Yeah, it's kind of like describing Trump. Yeah, sometimes it would just be better to say nothing.
Just shut up. Yeah. Exactly.
And speaking of ex-Fed chairman, guess who's arguing with the boss nowadays? Janet Yellen says, what do you mean we're not going to raise taxes under $400,000? We're going to raise them on everybody.
Well, as it's scheduled right now to happen in 2026. And I had a lot of maybe politically neutral or slightly liberal friends tell me that they didn't get a tax cut in 2017.
Right.
But I guarantee you that they're going to notice the tax hike in 2026.
And all they're doing is undoing it. If they could pull up the comparative sheets, I think they'd find differently. Now, there is a group of people who's been hurt badly by that. And a lot of people have no sympathy. But the people who are from high-tax states and make a lot of money were hurt at the limitation on the SALT deduction, state and local taxes.
But my argument to that is, why should the rest of America subsidize high-cost states?
And that's a very valid and interesting question.
I don't see how that's fair.
My only suggestion at this time, I don't want to get rid of it and go back to the old way, but I would like to see it operate like so many other things in the tax code do. You get $10,000 if you're single and $20,000 if you're married.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would eliminate a lot of the perceived unfairness.
And then index it for inflation. Why do we index some things and not others? It's really irritating.
Anything that's statutorial, meaning set by Congress and doesn't have a mechanism for change, it's got to go.
If your property taxes go up every year, why doesn't the limit on your deduction go up every year? Cap it at 3% or whatever, but it should be indexed. It doesn't make sense not to.
Yeah, it is. Well, like you said, it doesn't make sense. Totally nonsensical.
Yep.
It's a classic case of using the tax code to manipulate behavior.
Absolutely. Oh, that, yeah, it's a very drastic example of that, but yes, it is.
Now, there are things in the tax code that do manipulate behavior. One of them is the deductibility of your 401k contributions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Contributions. And there are people out there trying to take that away now.
Which is there such a bad been, idea.
There have been people out there. The first solid proposal I saw about that was when W was in the White House. He tried to eliminate all of that and just make the system that was basically all Roths. And he got laughed off the podium by both sides.
Mm-hmm.
People understand the value of the 401k and the IRA and the deductibility of same, because that encourages behavior that we want to see, meaning saving more, because
mm-hmm.
Social Security isn't going to cut it. In fact, I've got another article here about how our Social Security system is so flawed compared to the British system. You know anything about the Cato Institute?
No.
They call themselves libertarians, a libertarian think tank. If they're libertarians, I don't know what I am. They're as wacky as anybody else in D.C., but they say that we should be doing more of what England does. Because England has a pension system that everybody pays into, and the benefits they get are relatively the same. And ours, the woman who wrote this, is complaining because ours is a system of payments based on the premiums that are paid into it by the individual. And yeah. I said, yes. So my question that I wrote out this morning, does she also think that we should have a king?
Probably.
I've never been to England, but I don't want a king and I don't want a flat pension system either. We'll be right back after a short break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee. We're
poking some fun at some unusual things in the break here. I was telling Adam about a former Google employee. Most of you remember us talking about the FIRE, F-I-R-E, the financial independence, retire early, and we debunk it every time it comes up because the answer is always the same. People who try to do it, the advice that they get from people is, well, you got to get a job.
Yeah, you still have to work.
Yeah. So you retire, and then you have to get a job. I'll guarantee you the one you retired from will pay you better than the part-time job or whatever that you're getting after the fact. Just doesn't work well the other way. But anyway, this guy retired on a Friday, and on Monday he was complaining that he was bored and didn't want to retire anymore. That's some real planning went into that one, huh?
Well, since we're talking about young people, I wanted to talk about an article I found that I found pretty funny. The title is 63% of financial advice on TikTok is misleading, one study found, and users love it anyway. This may not be an issue going forward because who knows what's going to happen with TikTok. I'm not really sure. But one thing is sure, that there's some bad advice on TikTok. The one that really stood out to me in this was the first one they talked about. There is a content creator on TikTok called Patricia Milan. And she, they call the account Business Women University. So she's trying to give financial advice to women, a noble cause and effort, but
does she have any qualifications?
Well, when you hear this, you tell me if you think she does, because she says she secured about $150,000 in cash to buy an Airbnb unit by maxing out her credit cards. And her plan,
no.
Her plan was to pay that back with the proceeds from the Airbnb. Wow. I mean, is that the worst idea you've ever heard? It's got to be close.
It's up there.
Yeah.
I've got a top 10 list. Something will get bumped off of it for that one, for sure.
Yeah. A second video they found gave advice on how to obtain high credit card limits by creating a series of circular transactions between her own companies.
Oh.
Yeah. WorldCom, anyone?
Oh, how about Enron?
That's actually illegal.
Yeah. Yeah. Enron was doing the round trip.
Yeah. Thing. So was WorldCom. That's crazy. Just be careful with, it's not like there isn't good advice on TikTok. I'm sure there is, but you really have to just vet everything fully and make sure that the people who that are telling you these things know what they're talking about and don't blindly follow anything, because that is some scary stuff right there.
Yeah, there's an old saying that says, consider the source.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, credentials really do mean things. In fact, there's a big controversy going on right now about the fiduciary rule. It's probably been 10 years they've been trying to find a fiduciary rule that makes everybody happy, and they can't do it. You want to know why?
Lobbies? Lobbyists?
Well, let's go to the simple concept of a fiduciary. You can't take commissions and be a fiduciary.
I disagree. I think there are some very
there
very
are some who do
commission people out there.
I don't think you can write it that way, though. I just don't see it.
I don't know. I think it's possible. Maybe I'm naive, but I do think that there is a way to make the commission salespeople do things that are not in the client's best interest.
Yeah, it's tough that when you're earning a living that way, if you've got two equal products and one pays more, sure, take the higher one.
Yeah, it is tough.
But they got to be dead equal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really tough. So I don't know. Don't expect to get a real good answer on that. Anyway, you had something, an article that you wanted to
bring up.
The end of it? Okay. Yep. I just wanted to know for sure. I have not ever been on TikTok. I read constantly about stupid things that people find there, so I'm hardly surprised.
Well, the hashtag wealth was viewed 55 million times last month.
Last month.
Yeah, so just think about the number of people that are on TikTok and searching for wealth-related advice.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, guess what billionaire now wants to support Biden's 25% wealth tax?
25%? What do you mean by 25% wealth tax?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. 25%. If you reach a net worth of $100 million,
okay,
Biden wants to tax 25% of your net worth, your accumulated net worth.
Annually?
So I suppose they do that until your net worth falls under $100
million. Whoa. Like take $25 million from you?
Yeah.
Holy
25%.
Cow. Well, that's...
Well, yeah. What if you're worth a billion?
Well, right. I mean, if you're worth $100 million, that's insane.
It is. And I have talked a couple times in the past.
I've never heard this proposal. Is that even a real proposal?
As much as anything Biden puts out does.
I've
send the article home with
I've
you.
Seen some crazy stuff like a 44% capital gains tax, but that's insane.
There is a possibility that the person writing this didn't understand it, but it was stated very plainly.
I don't think that's a real proposal. I haven't seen anything like that.
Yeah, it's at least another rung in the ladder of soak the rich. And it's working in some places.
The ones I've seen have been like a 1 or 2%. It's still wrong, but it's like a 1 or 2% on your total net worth.
I agree.
But
25% is just
there's no way.
It's just beyond stupid.
It'd be dead on arrival anyway.
But the tax the rich thing is taking hold. I guess it's always been. It has some traction, but the blue states now. The polls in the blue states find that the majority of people support taxing the rich to save Social Security.
Well, I think that's inevitably going to happen.
Yeah, but not extra. We've talked about it over and over on air. Eventually, and meaning not long from now, every part of your salary, there won't be a cap.
There's no cap. There's not going to be a cap in the future.
First thing they'll do is pick it up again at 250
and then
from wherever it is. And then they'll just let inflation
for sure.
of course, that part is indexed, so it's an automatic guarantee they're going to get everything eventually.
I don't think they'll do a two-step process. I think it's just going to be removing the cap.
And then, of course, what will people do? They'll change the nature of their compensation so that it isn't subject to that.
Absolutely.
What happened when Nixon did wage and price controls in the 70s? I know there's a lot of people listening here that remember that. Well, that's when we invented some magical things called non-taxable fringe benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did stock options. When corporate America and its executives are faced with a problem, they solve it. And they always solve it in a way that makes them better off. So you can't be smarter than these people and sit in Congress for a living. It just seems to be an impossibility. Anyway, here swing state voters are in favor of it right here. In fact, this is the same article. I'll read it to you here. President Joe Biden's billionaire tax would place a 25% levy on households worth more than $100 million. The plan taxes accumulated wealth.
I have not seen that. I don't know. That seems crazy even for this administration. So I'd have to see it.
Yeah, and like I said, it could be that it's just written wrong.
I think so. The fact is, Joe Biden gets tons of donations from people that are worth this amount of money, and they would never do this. They would never support this.
That's the truth. How many of you have heard of Jared Bernstein? He's on TV every once in a while. He's the head of the Council of Economic Advisors for the White House. And he got asked the other day about printing money. This female journalist asked him, if he could just print money, why do we sell bonds? And here's his answer, and I'm quoting this now. The government definitely prints money, and it definitely lends that money by selling bonds. Is that what they do? They sell bonds. Yeah, they sell bonds, right? Since they sell bonds and people buy the bonds and lend them the money, Bernstein, chair of the council, said, I don't get it. I don't know what they're talking about, the economic advisor to Biden added, because it's the government clearly prints money. It does all the time, and it clearly borrows. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So I don't think there's anything confusing here.
Okay.
Now,
this guy's advising the most powerful man in the world.
Yeah. Here's his he was an economic advisor to Obama also. Here's his bio. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts from the Manhattan School of Music, a master's degree in social work from the Hunter School of Social Work, a master's degree in philosophy, and a PhD in social welfare from Columbia University. And he is the head of the Council of Economic Advisors to the Biden administration. And if you ever see him on TV, I dare you to listen to the whole thing and not laugh. It is truly funny. Okay. The average millennial would have to be paid $683,987 a year based on their own perceived net worth or the value for work of $328.84 per hour. Boomers, being a little bit more respectable than that, would only need a mere $285,000 because they're only worth in their heads $137 an hour. And the U.S. annual salary is actually $59,000 or $28.36 an
hour. Little disconnect there.
Seems to be something missing. That financial education we've been talking about so long, our job is not done.
Wow.
We can say that for absolute certain. Thanks for listening, everybody. Appreciate the calls. And always like having you here. We'll be here next week, same time. This is the Vanway Financial Hour.